Welcome to the podcast of Paley Presbyterian Church. The following sermon is by our associate pastor, Becca Bruner.
So as far as I can tell, there's about two kinds of people in this world. I'm pretty sure, if I think about it, Jeff, who is away performing his son's wedding in Connecticut today, Jeff represents one kind, and I kind of the further end of the spectrum. And here's how the categories line up. There are people like Jeff who just go through the day, who get home after the end of a long day, and kind of go, I think I forgot to eat today. I don't know if you know this about Jeff, he just doesn't eat. He'll just go through the day and not eat and just kind of be okay with that. And then there are the rest of us who not only enjoy eating, but need to eat, who function so much better when we eat, who don't ever, sometimes it'll happen, I'll miss a meal, but I'm not gonna be happy about it. I'm certainly not going to have forgotten about it. I'm gonna be hungry. I miss enough meals, I miss food a long enough period of time. I'm not just hungry, I'm hangry. You know this? Do you know this word, this feeling? You've all experienced it some way, shape, or form along your life, I'm sure. It's that experience, if you go long enough between periods of time of eating, this thing happens where your blood sugar drops, and all of a sudden, everyone and everything in the world is just terrible. Like, you're not just hungry, you're not just angry, you're hangry, right? We all know what it's like to feel hungry. Some of you might be feeling that right now, looking at your watch, saying, okay, let's get this going, I gotta get to lunch, all right? We all know what it's like to feel hungry, physically, yes, but I would say also most of us know what it's like to feel hungry spiritually as well. I mean, every day, we are surrounded by people who are hungry. And I'm not just talking about hungry for food, though certainly that is a reality as well. What I'm talking about is we are surrounded by people every day who are hungry for more. Hungry for life. Think about it. Just think concretely about this with me for a minute. Think about that guy who works in the cubicle next to yours. Think about the mom you see when you go to the park. She's always there, that mom with those two kids. Think about that person who kind of is always just on the periphery of your friend group, the people that you hang out with. All of us are surrounded every day with people who are hungry. Do you sense it? Do you sense that there are just some people in your life who are hungry for more, even if they don't know it? But what about you? How are you hungry for more? Life, I know, for all of us, life can get very, very full. But the way our life gets full does not always translate to satisfied, does it? We are hungry. We're hungry for affirmation. We're hungry for somebody, anybody, to just tell us that the things that we do are good, are valuable, are worth something. We're hungry for affirmation. We're hungry for belonging, for somebody, anybody, to tell us not just that what we do is good, but that who we are is good and valuable. And worth something. We're hungry for meaning, for purpose, for a sense that in some way, somehow, we can and are making a difference in this world. We're hungry. And God knows it. I think that's why he sent Jesus to do something about it. We're continuing in our series this morning on miracles. All summer long, we're looking at the many miracles that Jesus performed throughout his earthly ministry. And the miracle we're going to look at today is somewhat unique. You see, in all four gospel accounts, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, there are only two miracles that get recorded in all four of them. One of those miracles, of course, is Jesus' resurrection from the dead. All four gospel writers, they all agreed that that was pretty important. Probably want to write that one down. So all four of them have the resurrection, but all four also only have the miracle that we're going to look at today. This is the only other one that appears in all four gospel accounts, the feeding of the 5,000. So clearly, if this is the resurrection and this one, these are the only two recorded by all four, clearly the gospel writers thought that this one was so important, so central to our understanding of who Jesus was and what he came to do, they all had to get it down. So let's look at it together. We're going to look at John's version of the story. It's in chapter 6, starting at verse 1. You can read in your pew Bibles or on the screen here with me. John tells us that after this, Jesus went to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, also called the Sea of Tiberias. A large crowd kept following him because they saw the signs that he was doing for the sick. Jesus went up to the mountain and sat down there with his disciples. Now the Passover, the festival of the Jews, was near. When he looked up and saw the large crowd coming toward him, Jesus said to Philip, "Where are we to buy bread for these people to eat?" He said this to test him, for he himself knew what he was going to do. Philip answered him, "6 months' wages would not buy enough bread for each of them to get a little." One of the disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There's a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what are they among so many people?" Jesus said, "Make the people sit down." Now there was a great deal of grass in the place, so they sat down, about 5,000 in all. Then Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to those who were seated, so also the fish, as much as they wanted. When they were satisfied, he told the disciples, "Gather up the fragments left over, so that nothing may be lost." So they gathered them up, and from the fragments of the 5 barley loaves left by those who had eaten, they filled 12 baskets. So what makes this miracle story so important? What makes it so central to our understanding of who Jesus was that all the gospel writers chose to include it? What does it tell us about Jesus? What does it tell us about us? Well, 3 things I want to highlight. The story I see tells us what Jesus came to do, shows us how he came to do it, and then finally it gives us a glimpse of how we enter into that as well. Another way of putting that, shows us Jesus' mission, shows us his method, and it reveals to us something about our ministry as well. So let's jump into those. The story tells us a lot about Jesus' mission, what Jesus came to do, and what Jesus came to do is this: he came to feed the hungry. Jesus came to feed the hungry, the physically hungry and the spiritually hungry. Jesus came to feed bodies and Jesus came to feed souls, both. See, this crowd that flocked to Jesus that day, they came because they were hungry and they weren't hungry for food. Not at first, anyhow. See, John tells us that they flocked to Jesus because they saw the signs that he was doing for the sick. We know that Jesus had been healing people of all kinds of diseases, and people saw this and they wanted in. They saw these things that he was able to do for their friends, for their family members, for their neighbors, and they were starving for what Jesus had to offer. And so Jesus fed them. This crowd, they came and found him on that mountainside, and the other gospel accounts tell us that Jesus spent that whole afternoon teaching them, speaking to them, healing people of all kinds of diseases. This went on that whole afternoon. He fed their hungry souls. And, well, after several hours of that, their bodies got hungry too. And so Jesus did what Jesus came to do. He fed their bodies as well. Jesus' mission, to feed bodies and to feed souls. We, in our day, put it like this. We categorize those in ways of social justice and evangelism. Both equally important to Jesus. Equally important to Jesus, and yet sometimes for some of us, we flip them apart. And in the Christian world, somehow we've got these different camps who've decided that one is more important than the other. This, we've split apart what Jesus held so beautifully together. See, there are some who would say that Jesus' primary mission, his whole reason for coming to earth, and our purpose as we follow him, is the feeding souls side of things. That Jesus came and we're to follow him by preaching the word, by converting the pagans, evangelizing the unreached. And there is no doubt that is a crucial part of why Jesus came to earth and our mission as well. At the end of Matthew's gospel, we have the Great Commission in which Jesus tells us, go, make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. Jesus tells us to do this. He did come to feed souls, and he calls us to do the same. However, we get ourselves into trouble. And we don't do the world a whole heck of a lot of good when we forsake the reality that out there in the world, where there are hungry souls, many of them are housed in some pretty hungry bodies. We come to feed souls. But there are some who then, recognizing that hungry body side, they start leaning on that side a little more. They see Jesus' primary mission in more physical terms. So for this group, you know, they see their Jesus' mission and theirs as well as more physical needs being met. So these Christians, they set themselves out. They go out, they provide food and clean water and medicine and education for all. And that is so good. It's so good. Because Jesus himself said, we can read it in Matthew 25, Jesus calls us to feed the hungry, to give drink to the thirsty, to clothe the naked, to care for the sick. These are all good things, but the problem, again, comes in here when we lean too far this side, is when we focus so much on the physical needs, we forget there are real spiritual needs there, too. We've got to remember the mission of Jesus is both feeding bodies and feeding souls. It is never either or. It is always both and. Jesus' mission, what he came to do, to feed bodies and to feed souls. So then the question is, what's his method? How did Jesus go about this? And this is where the story gets good. This is where the miracle happens. See, this crowd of 5,000 plus is sitting there, and they are hungry. They need to eat, and everybody knows it. Jesus knows it. The disciples know it. That crowd, I'm sure, by the growling stomachs out there, they know it. What nobody knows is where the food's coming from. Well, nobody but Jesus, that is. He knows what he's about to do. But it's funny. It gets a little sassy here. I kind of like it. Jesus turns to the disciples, and specifically to Philip, and he asks, where would they buy bread for these people to eat? This wasn't the we that means we so much. And I think the disciples knew it. It's kind of like when I say to my husband, well, when are we going to take out the trash? He knows, I know. I don't mean we in that scenario. I mean you. When are you going to take out the trash? So Jesus asks him, where are we to buy bread for these people to eat? I.e., where are you going to buy bread? How are you going to feed all of these people? And quite understandably, as my husband does respond to me at times, the disciples respond hesitantly. They push back a little bit. They say, yeah, this can't be done. They can't feed this whole crowd. They don't have enough. They don't have enough money, enough resources, enough anything. They send the people away, Jesus, they say. Let them feed their hungers somewhere else. We can't help them. And in some ways, you know, they were right. They couldn't help that crowd on their own. But that's exactly the point, isn't it? It seems to me that Charles Swindoll was right when he said, we are all faced with a series of great opportunities, brilliantly discussed. disguised as impossible situations. Let me say that again. We are all faced with a series of great opportunities brilliantly disguised as impossible situations. This was an impossible situation for the disciples. But the key here was not the problem. The key here was who was with the disciples to solve the problem. By themselves, feeding this crowd would have been impossible. But with Jesus, all things are possible. So here's where we get to Jesus' method. His mission, feed bodies, feed souls. His method, use us to do it. Because here's the thing. Of course, in that moment on that hillside, Jesus could have called on heaven and bread could have rained down from the skies. Jesus could have scooped up some dirt and from that dirt transformed it into a gourmet meal to feed the masses. He who turned water into wine and walked on stormy seas, Jesus could have done any number of things to feed that hungry crowd all on his own. But he didn't. He chose to use the disciples instead. See, in their hands, all they had was barely enough to feed just one. Just a couple cheap barley loaves and a few salted sardines. In their hands, it was nothing. In Jesus' hands, it was enough to feed the masses. Jesus took that meager offering and he multiplied it. He turned it into enough to feed all those thousands of people and still have enough for each one of those disciples to take a basket full home. Jesus' mission, feed bodies and feed souls. His method? Take a second. Look at the people sitting next to you. I mean it. Look at them. His method? They're sitting right next to you. They're sitting right in that same seat you're sitting in right now. You're it. How does Jesus feed hungry bodies and souls in our world? How does he feed that starving child in Sudan? How does he pay the medical bills of an unemployed family? How does he put courage into somebody who is frightened? How does he put hope into a person who is depressed? How does Jesus put comfort into a person who is grieving? Does he do it entirely on his own, just zapping them out of the blue? Sometimes, yeah. But more often than not, it seems to me Jesus chooses to delegate. He looks at his disciples and he looks at you and me and he asks, where are we going to buy bread for these people to eat? And like those disciples, you may respond hesitantly. You might push back a little bit. Some of us know. We say, yeah, Jesus, not me. I don't have enough money. I don't have enough time. I don't have enough talent. I don't have enough fill in the blank. Send these hungry people away, Jesus. I can't feed them. You know, I got to tell you, I feel that way. I have that pushback with Jesus pretty much every time I sit down to prepare to preach. I sit down and I read the scriptures for the week and I write out notes and ideas and thoughts on paper, but nothing ever feels up to the task. Because as I sit down and I read and I think, I'm not just thinking about the words, I'm thinking about all of you, and I'm thinking about what I know of so many of you, that the hopes that you feel, the hungers that you carry, the hurts that are within you. And I sit down and I can't help but feel like I've got nothing. Like there is no possible way. I can't feed them, Jesus. I can't. And I know you feel this way too. All of us, we know what it feels like to find ourselves in situations where we simply don't have enough. A friend comes to you and tells you her husband has just left her. What can you do to help her? A neighbor who just lost his job and his health insurance just learns now that he has to have a major surgery. What can you offer him? Or to bring it closer to home, a family member sinks deeper and deeper into depression. A loved one is diagnosed with cancer. A child turns away from you and turns towards some pretty terrible choices. We desperately want to help, but what we have is not enough. And as a church, the same principle applies. We see the desperate needs around us. Here, right here in Chester County, the wealthiest county in all of Pennsylvania, still here, 10% of the people in this community don't have enough money to eat. From our mission partners in Belize, we know that 41% of that population lives below the poverty line, making less than $1.90 a day. From the news, we know that Coptic Christians, our brothers and sisters in Egypt, are being bombed left and right. And we're bombarded with these statistics about millions of people being displaced from their homes in places like Syria and Sudan, living in refugee camps for a minimum of 17 years. We look around the world, we look into our neighborhoods, we look into our own homes. We see the need, we see the pain, and we wonder, what can we possibly do? Well, that's where we must remember, where we only see impossibility, Jesus sees opportunity. Where we run into our own inadequacy, that is where we can experience Jesus' all-sufficiency. Where we can only offer Jesus our poverty, that's when he turns it into plenty. Jesus' mission, feed bodies and feed souls. His method, he's using us to do it. So the last part, what are we to do with that? What's our ministry? And here it is, you ready? Really simple. Feel the hunger, feed the hunger. Feel the hunger, feed the hunger. All clear? We can go now? Maybe I'll explain it a little bit. Feel the hunger. Feel your hunger. See, if Jesus came to feed all bodies and all souls, that includes yours. Hunger is this interesting sensation. See, at times you feel it really, really strongly, but have you ever had that experience that you're really, really hungry, but you go a little bit longer and somehow it just kind of goes away? It's true of our bodies, and it's true of our souls, too. It's easy to forget, but that hunger is there. See, our souls were made to hunger and thirst for God. We were made to feel restless, ill at ease, hungry without the presence of God in our lives. Jesus himself said, "Man shall not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God." That hunger that you feel, that I feel, that we all feel for affirmation, belonging, comfort, peace, purpose, and meaning, those are all little hungers rooted in this grand hunger, this deep God-given hunger planted in each and every one of us for him. We can try, and we do try to fill those hungers with other things, but as we do, we will always be left unsatisfied. So maybe instead of trying to fill those hungers ourselves with whatever we can find, what if we instead let ourselves feel that hunger, really feel it? Allow ourselves that space to notice and feel where we need God the most. Feel the hunger. Feel your hunger. And then feed the hunger. One of the ways you feed that God-given hunger within you, you're doing right now, coming and participating in communal worship together. That is one of the ways that we connect our souls to Jesus, who is the bread of life. Other ways are for participating in Bible studies or small groups, sharing life with other believers who can join you on your journey. For me, I'll confess, this last couple weeks, I got out of my routine. I wasn't getting up and having that time in the morning with scripture and with prayer, and I was feeling that hunger, and so I had to set that alarm again and get up and have time to listen and to pray with God. Feel the hunger and feed the hunger, your hunger. And then, once again, do it again. Feel the hunger and feed the hunger. This time, the hunger's out there in the world. You see, first you gotta feel it. Before you feed it, you gotta feel it. Shane Claiborne, who was here preaching just a couple months ago, he writes, "I've come to see that the great tragedy in the church is not that rich Christians do not care about the poor, but that rich Christians do not know the poor. I truly believe that when the rich meet the poor, riches will have no meaning. And when the rich meet the poor, we will see poverty come to an end." See, if we want to feed the hungry of the world, and I know we do, if we want to feed the hungry of the world, first we have to feel the hungers of the world. And if we want to feel the hungers of our world, then we need to know the hungry of our world. Do you hear me? This isn't something we can do from afar, from a distance, just write a check and be on our way. We have to get close. Close enough for people to tell us, "I'm lonely. I'm hurting. I'm in need. I have nothing. I'm hungry." Man, once you feel that hunger, you will want to do everything in your power to feed it. Close with this. I was talking with my parents this week. We were talking together just about this very thing, about the staggering amount of need that we see all around us, need in our world, need in our communities, need in our churches, need in our own family and friend groups. It was so much need. It is so easy to get overwhelmed and feel like you can't possibly do But my mom, in her infinite wisdom, came up with this approach. She said, "You know, I can't do it all, but I can do one thing, and I can give it to God." You know, that's what the disciples did, and that's what we can do too. We can't do it all, but we don't have to give in to despair. We can do one thing, no matter how small it may seem. We can do that one thing. We can give it to Jesus. Trust him to use it. And use it he does. That's what Jesus does best. He takes whatever we have to offer him, our time, our money, our talent, our prayers, and our very sometimes poor words. Jesus takes it all and he blesses it. He multiplies it. He uses it for his own glory and for our and our world's good. Jesus' mission, he came to feed bodies and souls. He came to feed the hungry. His method, he chooses to feed the hungry through us. So our ministry today is to let him. To let him fill up our hungers and let him fill the hungers of the world through us.